Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has a new podcast every 2 weeks with up-to-date information about aviation technologies for general and business aviation. From home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech, Plain Talk provides informative information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 1,900 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology and aviation industries.
I'd like to introduce and welcome Dave McDonald, president and founder of the International Canadian School of Survival, to Plain Talk. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
So tell us a little bit about your background and your organization.
So I spent 19 years search and rescue with the Air Force full-time, 6 years at the Air Force Survival School. I seen how important the training was in both aspects, from search and rescue and from the survival school. And I seen how much people enjoyed learning it and how much confidence it would build in people. And I decided once I got out, I needed to find a new mission once I got out of the military. And then I started my own survival school. Basically, we teach what the Air Force teaches. We figure search and rescue with the Air Force, they do the majority of the remote search and rescue. So if we teach you what they know, then you'll hook up safer and faster for both of you.
Wow. So I take it as a Canadian Forces SAR-TEC that you have a bunch of jumps out the back of Hercules under your wings?
Yeah, the Herc, Twin Otter, Buffalo, Labrador helicopter. Yeah, I've got a few jumps out there.
Wow, if you don't mind me asking, how many?
I'm thinking I'm really not sure. Between 1,000 and 2,000.
Wow. How are your knees?
My knees are good. My back's done. That's why I was released in the military for back injury.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. It must have been very arduous, especially if you're jumping into Canadian wilderness, into the trees and bush.
And I like to train worst case scenario when I went out, so I always went full equipment, side door, low altitudes, so you didn't have much time to get ready to hit the ground.
How much equipment would you have on you?
We carry a penetration kit and our survival kit, B-25 kit, possibly snowshoes, possibly a firearm as well. We were carrying 30-06s with a collapsible butt at that time. So pack on whatever gear, and then water jumps. Again, you could have your B-25 and a life raft and medical kit. And yeah, you get maybe, 60 pounds worth of gear.
Oh, that's a lot. And hitting
quite a bit.
Hitting the ground at about 20 kilometers an hour?
Well, it depends on the winds and how you are with your chute and landings. It could be higher than that considerably if you were hooking in on a turn or something and you're a little low, or you could come down on tippy toes and just, it's easier than getting out of bed.
Well, there you go. I have one jump under my wings.
Nice.
Yeah,
hopefully it was on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in Edmonton doing some work and invited by some folks from the Alberta skydiving team.
Nice. You must have went tandem, did you?
Absolutely not.
No, no, really?
No, that's like training wheels, don't you think?
Nice.
So yeah, I went out the door by myself. And one of the most funnest things I've ever done. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the jumping. Although, it is dangerous, but it's kind of worth the risk.
And then, of course, actually dealing with hurt people in the bush, that must have been challenging.
Yeah, it was good to find them alive, for sure. It didn't always happen. We were kind of trained between a paramedic level 2 and a level 3. We did IV drugs, but no cardiac drugs, mostly pain meds and such. But yeah, we were good at our job and helped quite a few people out.
And with all that experience and working in the as an instructor for the forces, I take it that led you to creating the International Canadian School of Survival.
As a matter of fact, it did. I've seen a lot of people get into predicaments they didn't have to deal with, and I'd still like to contribute, so I got into the prevention, which is teaching now. Survival, wilderness advanced first aid, and land navigation skills. If you don't get lost, you don't end up in a survival situation for the most part.
So an ounce of prevention, pound of cure.
You got it. You got it.
Yeah, I would think that the average private pilot hopes for the best, but perhaps might not plan for the worst in terms of the gear that they have in the aircraft.
Definitely. Now I kind of promote the personal safety triangle: navigation skills, first aid skills, and survival skills. Survival training really is first aid prevention. If you can deal with the environment and the emergency, then you shouldn't end up having to do the first aid. So when it comes to carrying equipment, again, I say the same thing, right? Carry some land navigation, GPS, portable GPS, handheld, compass, and then carry a proper first aid kit with some good equipment in it. You don't need much. And I recommend you build your own first aid kit and then seek out and carry proper survival equipment and training. And you'll be by far better off. And when the Sartex parachute into you because you did a forced landing or whatever, you better have some tea on, right? So you got to have a shelter up and a fire going and some tea on for the troops when they get in there to help you out.
Good idea. How long typically, like when the Sartex find you, how long would you might have been in the bush for?
It should be maximum 72 hours,
wow.
3 days, but you always prepare to be there longer. Hopefully they're there within a couple of hours if everything's gone right. But normally at least 12 to 24 hours, I would think, 48 hours, depends on your flight plan and when the emergency and how long they were doing the initial search for by phone.
Probably a little bit about, do you have an older 121.5 ELT in the aircraft or a newer 406, which I understand gets the positioning of a downed aircraft up to the satellites and then down to the JRCC a lot faster than the old 121.5.
Yes, and the 406 also typically have a 21.5 beacon as well, so they can home in once they're getting close to your position.
Really reduces the search radius substantially.
Oh yes, considerably.
I suppose, especially in the bush, it can be a bit of finding a needle in a haystack.
Yes, for sure. And if the plane's white and there's snow on the ground, it's even more difficult.
So I see that you've got two courses for aviators, a level one course and a level two course. Do you want to tell the troops about what those are like?
Sure. The level one, the first day is classroom. We go through the survival pattern. We go through the good survival prospect, so psychology of survival. We go through clothing and equipment, and it's good gear that's been tested by multiple people under harsh conditions, and I know it stands up, and it's priced in the decent range. We go through the search and rescue system, how it works, what resources are out there, and then the level two, and then you go outdoors for the day, and we go through the survival pattern again: first aid, fire, shelter, signals, water, food. For the first aid, really, it's hazard identification and mitigation. And then we go into the rest of it: fire, shelter, signals, water, food, what you should carry, how you should use it, what the best moves are for you in the bush, that I found anyway, and what the Air Force teaches. And then the level two is with an overnight and in pairs. And again, we go through the survival pattern and some more advanced signaling devices like the smoke generator, some more ground air signals, and again, fire shelter signals. Yes.
Do you recommend that, you know, the students do it, take the courses twice, one in the summertime and one in the wintertime?
I think they could take it once and then they could go out and practice in the other season, because basically it's the same. You know, the hazards are a little different. Cold versus heat injuries, right? Dehydration is always prevalent, either summer or winter, probably more so in the winter, because people have that water all around them, but they don't think to drink. They're not hot. Yeah, it's great training, and it's foundation work. You can build on it after you've had the foundation work.
I think it's absolutely important for people to test their skills, especially building a fire. It seems such a basic thing, but you just see so many people who just can't get it, you know, get a fire lit. And
yeah, most definitely. And you need to practice under different environmental conditions with different ways to ignite the fire, like a lighter or a ferro rod. Or I don't really teach fire by friction, you know, the bow drill or the hand drill. I teach people redundancy, so carry two lighters, carry safety matches or matches, and then carry a ferro rod as well, ferrocium rod.
And with you know, with us stuck with this pesky COVID-19, testing your fire skills in the backyard also gives you you know, a new task, and you know, enjoy your cognac or tea around the fire with the folks from you know, your social bubble.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You can practice most of the skills at home. I mean, even the signal mirror. Great piece of equipment. I highly recommend it if you're out boating or in a plane or skidooing, whatever. If something happens, it's good to have both the visual and audio signal. And the signal mirror is one of the best, cheapest ways, lightest, easy to carry, amazing piece of equipment. But it should have a sighting hole inside the signal mirror.
Well, a long time ago, I added to my my flight bag, a signal mirror compass, and of course, we carry a full survival kit in the back of the aircraft. One of the advantages of owning versus renting is you can, you know, equip the aircraft to your personal need.
Yeah, but I mean, it's portable too, right? You don't need that much in your survival gear, but yeah, definitely a lot easier if you own it rather than or renting.
So you must have tons of interesting stories about your courses you'd like to share.
Sure. You know, I've seen lots of things happen in the aviation industry. And if you think it's not going to happen to you, you could be wrong. And I've seen it happen often to people who didn't think it could happen to them. It's good to be prepared. It's a safety net. It's confidence for you and some for your family as well. If you have some training and you carry the proper equipment, you can pretty much go anywhere and do anything. I had a student who was working up north on the land, and he was on the ice roads, and he came across the head-on collision. Uh-huh. And it was a truck and a 4x4. And he had just been on my training maybe 6 months before at the most. And he took control of the situation, you know, called for help and got some signals out there on the road to indicate that there was a problem and so that nobody else came piling in around the corner. And then he got everybody out, did the first aid on them, got a fire going, got a shelter up, got them water, got them food, and sat with them for 5 hours before emergency services could get to them down the ice road.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, he said it was great that he could, you know, help others.
The folks in the truck and in the car must have thanked their lucky stars.
Yeah, because neither one of the vehicles was running, and they didn't really have much for survival equipment, and they didn't really know what to do.
And it obviously, being an ice road, it was the middle of winter time.
Middle of winter in the middle of nowhere, basically. Their ambulance couldn't get in, and they couldn't get an ambulance to them, and it ended up being RCMP that got there and transported people out.
Thank God there was no fatalities.
Yeah, there was no fatalities, and I'm not sure about how the injuries went, you know.
Sure. Your student was just in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. And he had the training, which was great. And the equipment. He carried the equipment that I suggested to, which was amazing.
Very good. So he must have called, called back to you guys to say, hey, I've, my training was worth every single penny, and here's why.
Yeah, he said, you know, he didn't have to use it, but he used it for others to help others. So, yeah, he wrote me a nice little note. It was great.
And that must just be, you know, so, you know, from your student's perspective, so rewarding being able to, you know, to deliver survival skills to the people that need it the most at the time that they needed it the most.
Yeah, it's a real confidence builder. And for the most part, you end up doing first aid or, you know, helping out family and friends. So if you have the ability, it's great to be able to take action. Feels really good.
Well, any final words, Dave?
Just that if you don't think it can happen to you, believe me, it can. I've seen it happen to a lot of people. Take some training, carry the proper equipment. If you want to go on our website, survivalbytraining.com, under resources, there are resources there for free, and that includes a survival equipment list. I don't sell any of the equipment except for maybe a couple of the hard-to-find items, like the good-quality signal mirrors. And I've also reprinted the Down But Not Out. I got permission to reprint it, and I've reprinted that for people because it's out of publication. Grab that little survival manual, give it a read, and then move on from there. Remember, if you think it can't happen to you, you could be wrong.
Well, again, Dave, thank you so much for being part of Plane Talk.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at plaintalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at plaintalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.